I've gone back probably about 100 years in my process to something that's still practiced in smaller villages in Italy today, but not on the large scale, where I dry my pastas very slowly and at low temperatures. I only use durum semolina, which is a very coarse grind of flour. I don't cut with any finer grinds of flour so that the pasta has a really dense texture.
Welcome to Uprising. Each episode looks inside what it takes to lead the most dynamic and successful cultural movements. Some of them in the business world, some in the social realm, some in politics, and some in between. To see why people start uprisings. What gives those initiatives momentum and keeps them going? And most important, what lessons can you learn from these movements and how to apply them to your business and even personal life? Let's explore the secret to sparking movements that move people into action.
Passionate ideas.
Controversial ideas.
Uprising ideas.
The power is now in the hands of anyone.
To start a cultural movement.
Your movement.
To move the world.
I wanted to go back to the way that people traditionally ate pasta. Over the last century, just like most food, pasta has become far more industrialized. And the processes that have gone into making dried pasta have changed dramatically, and that's changed the product dramatically. To make pasta on a really large scale industrial level, you need to dry it quickly. To be cost effective, you need to use cheaper ingredients to be cost effective. And none of those things equal flavor or texture. And so, and because of that, it takes much longer to make my pasta, but it tastes significantly better and has that nice dense chew that you would expect from really, really good old fashioned pasta.
Leah Ferenzani, who started the Semolina Artisanal Pasta Company, quickly outgrew her Los Angeles kitchen, where I suppose this company started. And most dried pastas available in America today are imported from none other than Italy, where pasta is a kind of a religion. So a couple of years ago, if you held a box of American pasta in your hand, you probably wouldn't believe that was from America. In fact, one of my favorite great pasta movies of all time was the movie Big Night. I mean, the story of these two Italian chefs came to America to open a restaurant to make gourmet food, only to be foiled by this big old entertainment restaurant across the street with flashing Christmas lights and lousy food. And this hit film was popular, I suppose, when you were growing up. And against this background and pretty big odds, you set out to revolutionize this plate by handcrafting dried pasta, and you've done it by utilizing, you know, American grown wheat. So this was a pretty crazy idea, no, when you started?
It might still be crazy. Most people think of pasta as a cheap filler food. It's inexpensive, it's cheap ingredients as far as they're concerned, and it tends to end up being a sauce delivery system. It's not really something that you eat for its own sake. And I'm trying to change that mentality and prove that really great pasta can be made in the United States. It doesn't have to be imported from Italy, and that it can really taste like something that with just a little touch of olive oil and salt, you can have something that's really quite delicious all by itself.
So what's the difference when you taste your pasta versus pasta from some of the brands you talked about, like from Italy?
Well, it depends on the brand from Italy, because there are still some small craftsmen, but the large scale ones, I think the most obvious thing, we'll start with just looking at it. A lot of industrial pasta is very bright yellow in color. And that is because when it comes through the extruder, the little discs that give it its shape, if you think of like a Play-Doh Fun Factory and you change the disc and that changes the shape that comes out of the machine, they're made out of Teflon. But I use bronze dyes. So when the pasta comes through those little discs, they're coming through metal, and that creates drag on the pasta and a really rough exterior surface, and so the color is much more creamy rather than bright yellow, and it almost looks it looks like it's been roughed up with sandpaper, and that's the easiest, most visual thing that you can do to tell the difference between quality pasta and an industrial pasta is that we've extruded through bronze dyes. That rough texture will help the pasta hold sauce. The next thing is that most industrial pasta gets dried at very high temperatures, about 185 degrees. That makes it a much firmer product in the package. It's much less likely to break, but it degrades all of the nutrition in the wheat and all of the flavor in the wheat. And so you end up with something that at best tastes like air and at worst sometimes tastes like cardboard. My pasta has a very nutty, almost floral flavor where you really get all of the quality of the very high quality Durum semolina that I use. The last piece in that is that the pasta that I make uses 100% Durum semolina. A lot of industrial pasta uses either Durum flour or extra fancy Durum, which are both finer grinds. And those qualities can diminish the texture of the pasta so that you end up with something that never really quite gets to be al dente. It can get really mushy in your mouth, which nobody should like mushy pasta. It's not a yummy thing. But by using 100% semolina, it's a hard wheat, and then it's a coarse texture, and those two things combine to create a dense, toothy pasta that really has a substantial texture to stand up to heavy sauces. And it's just such a better experience.
What is happening in American food culture that you see as a huge opportunity for you and your idea?
I think that people are waking up, first of all, to the true cost of food, that cheap food does not really necessarily serve us well as eaters. It makes us sick. It doesn't taste good. It's not satisfying, so we eat too much of it. And I think people are realizing that there's a better way to go about things. And there are artisans like me in all different types of industries who are trying to hearken back to a day when food meant something. It meant feeding your family. It was something on the table that you put out, and it showed how much you cared and not how quickly you put things together. That said, I'm a working mom, so I understand the need for something that isn't crazy time consuming. It's half the reason I started the business.
Is it actually that? I would assume that running your own company is like two full-time jobs plus being a mother and the rest.
Yes. Yeah, that is. But you know, when I come home and I want to cook something healthy and delicious for my family, I used to make fresh pasta and I don't have the extra 45 minutes to roll out my dough like I used to. And so I kept turning to my pantry and was very disheartened to find that I couldn't find anything that was locally made, that was certified organic, that, you know, evoked the qualities that I wanted in my food without having to import it from Italy.
But it's amazing, though, most people had to go out and start, you know, great movements or businesses have personal experience, and it really ties to their own, you know, their life. And so when you sort of went through that process of rolling out the pasta and you said, well, there isn't really this type of quality pasta out there, was that moment in time that just made you sort of realize, aha, this is something that has to change. This is something that, you know, for me has to change, and probably is the same for mothers across the country.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I feel like if I'm looking for it as somebody feeding my family, that there are probably other people looking for it. You know, we don't exist in a vacuum. So I know that I'm not alone in my ideals and my ideas. And so it just made sense. I couldn't find anybody doing it, so I had to do it.
And were you a rebel growing up as a young person? Like, what did you want to do when you were growing up?
It's changed a number of times. Yes, I've always been a bit rebellious. I wanted to publish great books of poetry, which definitely doesn't seem, you know, average in our culture. I And then I wrote about politics and science and art for a really long time. My master's thesis in journalism school was on the art of protest in history and in contemporary times. You know, I really believe in kind of looking the status quo head on and figuring out how to change the status quo. The first journalistic piece I ever wrote was published in a Marxist magazine, surprisingly.
That's great. That's so funny. They are big eaters, I hear.
They are. Well, you know, you got to feed the masses.
So when you decided to start your own pasta company, what did you say to your family?
That was the easiest part. You know, my husband and I had been talking about what I was going to do next in my life. I was writing about wine at the time and not having as much fun doing it as you should when you write about wine for a living. And we just kept kind of having these conversations about what I had done, which has always been in the field of writing and editing or working in restaurants, and what I really wanted to do. And my husband just kept saying, don't you want to make something? Don't you want to like put something out into the world that's physical and tangible? And I kept saying, I want to feed people, but I don't want to work in a restaurant. I don't want to work back of the house. I don't want to work front of the house. It's not conducive to my life, but I need to feed people. And when I sat down and told both of my folks and my husband, I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to make pasta. They were excited and enthusiastic. I come from people who are firm believers in, you know, creating the world you want to live in and the job that you want to do. And so they've been my biggest cheerleaders, and it's been really exciting.
When did you first know you could get traction? This idea?
I think it was the minute that I released the product. A couple of months before I launched the business officially, while I was still doing research and development, I went into a cheese shop that was about to open in my neighborhood in LA. And I introduced myself to the owner and I said, I'm starting a dried pasta business and I want to sell my pasta here when you open. And she kind of looked at me slightly boggled and was like, all right, well, we'll see when you have some product. And 2 days before I launched the business, I went in with a couple of samples of the retail packaged product. And I said, I'm going to launch the pasta business on Saturday at Artisanal LA, but I wanted to drop some off for you to taste. And she's like, oh, thanks. I'll get back to you. And I left. And 2 hours later, she called me and she said, I want a case of every cut. I want to have them in the store before you launch at this show. At this trade show, because I want people to know that they can get it here. It's amazing.
That's fantastic.
It was great reinforcement that I was doing something that was both unique and that it tasted as good as I thought it might. And for the first about 18 months of my business, my retailers, the majority of them came to me. I was doing everything. I was making the pasta. I was packing the pasta. I was washing the floors. I was doing the dishes. And so I didn't have a lot of spare time to make sales calls, but I kept getting new accounts. People would be like, oh, I found you here and I want to carry it at my store. Or I want to carry it here online. And some people came across it through my Kickstarter campaign, but I was able to grow pretty organically for the first 18 months. And then I feel like reception just in general has always been good. And when I've had to work through kinks, I've had a really amazing customer base that's been super supportive in working through my kinks. And it's been really exciting to see how it's been received. And it makes me think that people were wanting something like this for a long time and are glad that I'm doing what I'm doing.
So you're listening to Uprising with Scott Goodson. And so after experimenting with making pasta, and actually before the pasta, with writing about wine and other endeavors in the food industry, there you launched your own company. And you mentioned that you started with a Kickstarter. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, after I realized that I was going to quickly outgrow making pasta in my laundry room at home, and that I was going to need to expand the business, I knew I needed to buy a pasta dryer, a static dryer.
It was a very clean pasta from the beginning.
Yes, yes. So the equipment's about $25,000, and it seemed rather daunting for a new business to take out a loan for $25,000 when it wasn't exactly clear that I had a huge market yet. And so I decided to do a Kickstarter and felt like it would be a good way both to gauge interest and to get the money that I needed to make the product. And so I raised $26,752 in a month on Kickstarter. I was one of the highest grossing food campaigns on Kickstarter at the time. I learned after I did my campaign that the average food business could only raise between $4,000 and $5,000. So I was super excited to have raised the 25 grand. And it was such an amazing, though stressful experience, both making the pasta to then fulfill all of those Kickstarter orders, but really meeting all of these people who were so excited about what I was doing. A handful of them came over to dinner at my house. I had a friend who's an amazing chef come and cook for some. I cooked personally for some others. I had a local culinary school help me in an effort to make homemade mac and cheese or baked rigatoni for about 35 other people. And then I drove around Los Angeles in 100-degree weather and delivered it to people's doorsteps.
Wow.
But it was just such a great sense of community. And even now I go back when I'm trying to figure out my next step or what I'm going to do about a certain change with the business, I go back to those Kickstarter supporters and I ask them, because they're the people who believed in me from the outset. And I get really intelligent feedback.
Mentorship and wisdom that you're able to rely on. That's wonderful. So you launched it. You had this great power up, community behind you. And then everything just took off?
No, it definitely didn't take off. I bought that pasta dryer and then I was down for 5 months trying to figure out how to get it to work. there have been lots of hiccups. I got in hand-to-hand combat with my pasta extruder. Ended up with 18 stitches. Don't ever get into a fight with the pasta extruder. My dryer, I found out months after I got it and was having all sorts of trouble that the fans were calibrated incorrectly and the humidity sensor didn't work correctly. And there are really no technicians who know how to work on them. So I had to become an expert in thermodynamics and airflow and all sorts of things. But my journalistic experience has come in really handy running the business, because I am not afraid to find the obscure source and just ask questions. So I've got a pasta technologist out in Italy who's retired, who's an expert in static drying, who's been helping me try and resolve some issues and learn more about my dryer and how to use it better. Just because I sought him out and wrote a nice email and had it translated into Italian for me so that it was easy for him to understand. And he's been more than generous with his time and knowledge. So I feel
when
like
you grew up. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like, any success I have has definitely been, a matter of the community really rallying to help me through things.
And why do you think the community is so engaged? What is it about your story or about your pasta that has inspired strangers to come to your aid, provide advice, give you moral and financial support? What is it, in your opinion, that really is the motivation?
I think I'm everybody in that way. I think that people really relate to me. I make food with a lot of love and compassion and care. And I think that comes across to people and it really, and I'm a perfectionist. And I think people relate to that too, and wanting to put something really great out into the world and people see themselves in that and just want to help. I just think people are inherently kind and generous with their knowledge and their energy. And so they do what they can, whenever they can. And I think when you put that out into the world, you get a lot of it back.
That's inspiring, I think, for anyone about to start a company to realize that there's support out there. Do you think that some of your success is based on the fact that Americans today are maybe looking for something different in their food? Not just in terms of the quality of the food, but the brands that they're buying?
Absolutely. I think that there's a real lack of trust in the food system, especially among a savvy group of people. You know, there's been a spate of really great documentaries in the last 10 years talking about the food industry and how things are made. And I think it makes things a little frightening when you're talking about something that's really substantive. I grew up in a house where, you know, there wasn't a lot of junk food, and my mom made some very particular choices for her era on how we ate. We weren't crazy health food nuts, but it was obviously important to her that there was something both nutritious and thoughtful about the food that she put on the table when I was a kid. And I went to college in Sonoma County. And I think that became a real wake-up call for me as well, because it's a pretty rural area. I started seeing a lot more farms, ranches, dairy farms. And it made me a lot more connected to the source of my food, because it was so easy to get things that were grown locally or raised locally. I mean, there were cheesemakers, and it was an unbelievable place to live. And I think that also really changed my approach and feeling about food. And I think that that's kind of the same revelation that's happening across the country with people, in that there, you know, farmers markets are popping up. There's all of these efforts to build, you know, local food sheds and eat things that are in season. And you realize that, like, strawberries in February, even in Southern California, really just don't taste that good. And that they don't offer any real satisfaction. And I think people are just looking for something deeper.
So do you think that the this dissatisfaction is a huge yearning for better and authenticity and trust and all of the things that have eroded over the last few years, and that is an opportunity for you? And if so, how do you maximize that?
Absolutely. I think that those are all really the foundation of why that there's an artisanal food movement to begin with. And, you know, I try and capitalize on that in being as transparent as I can be in my business, in trying to communicate to the people who buy my food that I'm thinking about the same things that they are, that I care, that I don't, you know, there's nothing to hide in what I'm doing, so that I can evoke some sense of trust. You know, I want them, you know, I have a choice as a food manufacturer to go through a co-packer or to make the product myself. And I decided to make the product myself, because that's how I can instill that sense of trust and say, like, look, no, I mean, I see everything from start to finish. I know where I get my flour. You know, I buy it direct from the miller. There's just all these little things that I do to try and convey that sincerity. And in turn, I hope that people will trust that I'm doing all the things that I'm saying that I'm doing, and that the resulting product tastes better, and they can see that the time and the effort and the extra cost are all worthwhile.
That's fascinating. So if you're listening to this show and your mouth is watering, where can one get a hold of a package of semolina artisanal pasta?
Well, there are about 20 Whole Foods in the greater Los Angeles area, and then a spate of amazing small boutique markets and gourmet shops, both in LA and New York City. I'm also, you know, you can buy direct from me online. I'm on Amazon. I try and make it as accessible as possible. I'm working on broadening that scope so it's easier to get. I mean, support your local retailers And if you can't find some place to buy it, please email me. My website's semolinapasta.com. And I'd be glad to try and either get it to you or find somebody near you.
Great. Well, Leah Farnzani, thank you so much for spending time with us to talk about your gem of a pasta company that you started. It's been fascinating. And I wish you all the best in your movement to grow this across the country and maybe one day even launch in Italy.
Who knows? Thank you so much for having me, Scott. It was a real pleasure.
It's a pleasure as well. Thank you so much for your time.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining our uprising today and listening to our show. If you missed the show, or if you want to find out more about who was on, or if you want to learn more about how to create your own uprising, please go to uprisingmovements.com. You can also download this uprising program from iTunes. Uprising was produced by Nicola Keneally and Adam Helen, with special help from Melanie Boardman, Karin Drakenberg, Philippa Freeman, Brianna Campbell, Fashad Faroudi, Mark Bruzzi, Will Isom, James Politi, and Jonathan Weeks. My name is Scott Goodson, and you've been listening to Uprising. What we can learn about movements and uprisings that are shaping our world in business, in society, and in between. For more on cultural movements and movement marketing, be sure to pick up a copy of the best-selling book Uprising, How to Build a Brand and Change the World by Sparking Cultural Movements, available on Amazon.com.
Music for Uprising composed by Charles Duchateau.